Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at DunbarLumber.com. Busy day for the Canucks, busy day around the NHL. Busy show for us here today, and we are now joined by our next guest. She covers the team for the Canadian Press. She is our pal, Gemma Karsten-Smith. Gemma, nice to talk to you again. How are you?
Hi, my friends. I've missed you.
Yeah, we've missed you as well. We're excited, and it's fitting to have you on because there's a lot going on. There has been a lot going on for the Canucks this week, and I'll start with kind of the most recent news straight from Patrick Alvin earlier today that Nikita Zadorov will test the open market on July 1st. What's your reaction to that news?
Personally, sadness, because he is the best quote in the NHL, and I am devastated that he won't be in the locker room for all of us to just soak up his Zadorovisms, like we need to step on their throat, or comparing the team to Real Madrid coming back from a 2-0 deficit to win a game. Like, it's, he's got real character, and not like he also has like that hockey character of being like a guy who will play for the team and whatnot, but he's also just a character and fun to be around. So I guess our jobs just got harder and slightly more boring, I guess. But honestly, I think it's a loss for the team. I understand why they went in this direction. You can only play, there's only so much money to go around. He's gonna make bank on Monday. So I get it, but I'm sad for me.
Yeah, and I know a lot of fans will be in the same boat as you, right? This, because he did become such a fan favorite, especially once the playoffs rolled around, for all the reasons you're laying out, right? The personality, what he does on the ice as well. Now, they did lock up a few of their own free agents, obviously Teddy Bluger, Dakota Joshua, Tyler Myers. Of those three, which is going to be the most impactful for next season in your view?
I think Joshua is going to be the most impactful on the ice. I also think that it's the best deal that they've done so far. I remember a few months ago, the three of us were chatting about what Joshua could command on the open market, and I think this is less. Honestly, what surprised me about this deal wasn't necessarily the dollar amount, but the term. I thought that he would have been looking for something longer term, so I was surprised that they could get him at that number for that term. And I think that's a good bit of business on the Canucks' part, because he has grown so much as a player in his 2 years with the Canucks. I think he's probably got further to go. I think that if he hadn't had the hand injury, he would have been a 20-goal scorer easily this season. It's very much within his wheelhouse. And I'm intrigued to see where he goes moving further or down the road. So I'm also hoping that maybe he could let more of his personality out, because I know it's in there. When you talk to Dakota Joshua one-on-one, he's a funny guy and he's got lots of good stuff to say. So maybe he can take on some of those Zadorov role. Fingers crossed.
Well, Gemma disconnected here. Drance disconnected, Gemma, is what I meant to say. But we'll get Drance. Drance was trying to ask you a question, but his lips were moving. He's stranded in his apartment today, so he's on the video screen, and his lips were moving, but no sound was coming out. Are you back, Drance?
I don't know.
Yeah, you're back.
You're back.
Yay!
Hi, friend.
Oh, boy. Okay. Gemma, how are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I've been better. When you think about the full balance sheet of moves this week, the Bluger extension, the Mikheyev trade, Zadorov walking, Myers and Joshua getting done, what stands out to you as the most surprising of those moves relative to where your personal expectations were for this club?
I was surprised that they moved the Mikheyev contract, honestly. I was in Edmonton earlier this week helping out with end-of-season stuff there, and it came up on my phone, and I was just around some other folks and said, oh, my goodness. And No one else cared, but it was one of those situations where I had an audible gasp. I didn't think that they would be able to move that contract, especially before free agency. So good for them for that bit of business as well. I think that it does make a difference heading into Monday. It makes a huge difference in what they're able to do, right? Like we always say, you always want more cap space, and that is more cap space.
And, you know, we've talked about Joshua Myers gets 3 years. Mm-hmm. He'll turn 35, 36, 37 in those three seasons. We just know that there's risk with players like that. But given that he had his most successful season at 34, does that mitigate some of the risk in how you view the deal? Or what was your reaction in general to that extension?
Shrug. Is that an appropriate reaction here? Yep. I really like Tyler Myers as a person. I think that, like you said, he had his best season at 34. I don't think that the contract will look terrible next year. It will look worse the year after, and probably even worse the year after that. But like, it's also $3 million, right? So it's not a massive number. If he had gone somewhere else, he probably could have got more money on and less term. So I understand why he signs that deal here, but I he's got more to give, right? Like he is like locker room glue, that guy. So I think that it was an important signing for this team. I think that there's a reason he gets $9 million over 3 years, and it's probably fair, you know. Like I said, I don't think it's going to look glorious next season or the season after, but I think he's still got a lot left in the tank, and if he can stay healthy, then he's got a lot to provide this team.
It's incredible. If he plays out this contract, it's going to be 8 seasons on the Canucks for Tyler Myers, which, just given how often he was in trade rumors and all of those things under his first contract, is pretty remarkable. I just hope we can get another deal. Can we get a one-year deal for him after this three-year one extends? Can we get three contracts for Tyler Myers with the Vancouver Canucks is really what I'm curious about.
Oh, for sure.
More than anything.
And listening to, I wasn't on his media availability today, but I can't remember who it was. Someone was saying like, oh, this could be your last contract, and you could kind of see on his face like, excuse me.
I don't think so.
Can you not retire me before I'm ready? Thank you very much. And like, fair enough. Like, these guys are younger than we are, and we're constantly being like, so this is your last deal. It's just such a weird world we work in.
I would kill to be 34 again. And we're like, oh, 34. What? How is he doing this still? Looking ahead to, you know, this weekend, because we all know what trades can happen and everything at the draft, but July 1st especially, in your view, what do the Canucks most need to accomplish by, you know, let's say Tuesday afternoon?
They need a top six winger. Period. I thought it was really interesting on Patrick Ovechkin's avail that just happened, when was that, about an hour ago, that he was saying that they think that they've locked up their top four here, and that was really important to the Canucks staff. So that's and top four defensemen, I mean. So I thought that was interesting, because I thought that we could see them go out and get a big-name blue liner on Monday. It doesn't sound like that's the priority. We all know that getting a top six scoring winger has long been the priority, but I thought that getting a good defenseman was pretty close. It doesn't sound like that. So that's really interesting. I think the focus is on getting that score, getting someone who can play alongside Pettersson, and really solidifying that end of the roster. So that's what we should all be expecting, whether his name rhymes with rake or not, will be seen on Monday. But I think that's someone who's going to cost big money is what I would expect, and someone who's going to put pucks in the back of the net.
Well, and that comment about Tyler Myers from Patrick Ovechkin caught my attention as well, Gemma, kind of referring to him as a top four defenseman, especially because it does feel like when Tyler Myers is on your third pair, he's super, super effective. If you're expecting him to be a night in, night out top four defenseman and the minutes creep up, you know, two or above 20 minutes, that's maybe when the problems can start to crop up a little bit for Tyler Myers.
He is, after all, 34 years old.
Yes, exactly.
No, it's true though, right? Like, if you play him out of position, that's when you get chaos giraffe, right? It's kind of a terrible nickname because who wants to be associated with chaos? But that's when problems happen because you're being overtaxed. You're being asked to do things that aren't in your wheelhouse. And I don't think that's fair to him as a player. When you put him on your third defensive pair, it's just that's where he belongs. And he's a lockdown guy and he does a really good job. So give him the job that you've signed him to do. Put him in a position to succeed. And I don't know that him being in your top four is a position to succeed.
Gemma, with all of the reports about, you know, what's happening with Jake Guentzel, what's happening with some of the key top-end unrestricted free agent wingers, who look like they may not hit the market. Nothing's done until it's done. We don't want to make assumptions. But if the Canucks can't get one of those top-end wingers, right, are there any names that catch your eye as fits among that sort of second tier of guy?
Oh, man, Trans, that's a hard question. I leave those to you. I think there's going to be a lot of intriguing people out there on Monday, for sure. And I think that if it's not one of those top-tier defensemen, it's going to be someone that we don't expect. Something that this club has really shown an aptitude for in the last little while, and by last little while, I mean since the regime change, is pro scouting. Look, they found Dakota Joshua, right? And he was a real diamond in the rough, if you will. He wasn't playing solid minutes in St. Louis, and they brought him up here and really shined him up. And this week, he went and got the deal from this team that he really deserved. I think that they're looking to do that again, but they have shown an ability to identify players who will fit into the system, who can play for Rick Tocchet in a way that maybe they're not playing with their current club. So I no name leaps to the top of my mind, but I think there is nothing but options given the pro scouting that the Canucks have done in the past few seasons. How's that for a wiggle room and answer?
No, it's all good. In terms of like what to you would represent when you sit down on Tuesday and think about writing a recap of what the Canucks have done. So, doing like the Wayne's World, like do and throwing you into the future. What would a successful weekend look like for the Canucks? What would a weekend that would, include a headline on CP with the word concern look like? give me the best case and the worst case scenario as you see it.
Absolutely. I think if they can't find someone who can play with Pettersson right away, there's going to be trouble, right? We've seen that the mixing and matching is not working. He needs consistency. He needs that reliable winger who can produce. So I think that needs to be the priority. Like we were just saying about Tyler Myers, I think that you still do need to have another top four defenseman if you want to put everyone in a position to succeed. So those would be, none of this is a giant surprise here. I'm not recreating the wheel. We all know that those are holes in this team's lineup. But I think that the work they've done so far shows they have the ability to do that ahead of Monday. The biggest question is who's going to play ball, right? Who's going to accept the deal that they're offering? Because I think that Patrick Alvin has done a really good job of not overpaying. So we can all quibble with numbers, but he's not going out and spending all of the team's cap space on one player. And he has to be diligent about continuing that heading in to free agency on Monday, because I would be surprised if they only made two signings. You still have to have guys playing on the roster, and I don't think that there are that many undiscovered stars in Abbotsford to fill out the sheer number of guys that this team still needs. So I think that there's still a lot of work to be done, and it's not all going to be done on Monday. I think that you have to get two players signed on Monday for sure. One, you need a scoring winger, and you need a defenseman you can play in your top four. But I think that there's still a lot of work to be done before training camp opens in September.
Gemma, really appreciate it. Thank you for doing this as always. Enjoy July 1st, and we'll see what the Canucks can get done here.
So much fun, my friends. Have a great day.
That is Gemma Karsten-Smith covering the Canucks for the Canadian Press, weighing in. And yeah, as she said, it's not a big surprise, but the focus continues to be on that scoring winger, top six, top line, even scoring winger, if they can manage it. Now, another name that's out there, and one we touched on briefly earlier in the week, but now seeing some more kind of concrete connection between this player and the Vancouver Canucks, is John Marino, the defenseman, right shot defenseman from the New Jersey Devils. Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff tweeting about potentially interest from the Canucks in Marino. He also published one of his new trade boards, an updated trade board, just a few minutes ago. And here's what he has to say about John Marino. Marino appears to be the odd man out in New Jersey, as the Devils are believed to be pursuing multiple free agent defensemen on Monday, with a healthy Dougie Hamilton plus Luke Hughes, Simone Nemec, Seamus Casey. The Devils run out of room and cap space quickly on their roster. The Vancouver Canucks are one of the teams linked to Marino, a player Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin had in Pittsburgh, and signed him to his current contract. He's an intriguing, cost-controlled, check-down option for Vancouver if they're unable to keep Nikita Zadorov, but are able to land a free agent like Jake Guentzel. Marino's 8-team no-trade clause kicks in on Monday. So interesting to hear Frank specifically referenced, like, hey, if they're unable to keep Nikita Zadorov, maybe they look at John Marino. And then we hear from Patrick Alvin, yeah, we don't think we're going to be able to keep Nikita Zadorov. So you hear that and you do wonder, as we mentioned, you know, the ties with Rutherford and Alvin from Pittsburgh, the ability on the right side. I think a very, very interesting name for the Canucks to keep tabs in and at least kick the tires on what the cost would be from New Jersey.
Especially if the Chris Tanev domino never falls,
yep,
you know, into July 1. Yeah, I mean, Marino, again, right, has enough puck-moving ability, enough of that get-up-and-go, I think, where he'd give you some flexibility to play, like, a more defensive-oriented pair with Soucy, on a third pair, potentially, with you know, maybe carrying a third pair against softer comp, or even be an option to play up the lineup with Quinn Hughes. I like the versatility of that. I like the fact that it's 3 years at a relatively reasonable cap hit, a cap hit that I think he has a straightforward path to living up to, especially at his age. You know, to me, I think a Marino, like Marino, two interesting upside bets, one of them a more physical defenseman, one of them sort of a forward, and you know, a pretty good top six forward, like a Chandler Stephenson, Toffoli type. If that's your plan B, I don't think that's unlivable, but I don't know if it addresses that, you know, real look. I was talking to just a contact in the league, right? And his take on this was, if the Canucks can get a top of the lineup forward, you know, this summer, he thinks they'd be one of the two or three best teams in the West. Like,
wow.
He thinks that's enough to put them, you know, to a point where you're talking about them and Edmonton, you know, as sort of like the teams to beat out West. So when I'm talking about the need for, you know, a top of the lineup piece, it's not like a hobby horse. It's like, I really think the door is open for this team to get to that point pretty quickly if they're able to land the right guy. So, you know, I laid out that plan B, and it's like, yeah, that's probably a pretty fun team to watch next season. That's probably a team that might be in it with a shot, but it's still a team that I think would be like a big swing, like a big cut away from getting to that point. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm always going to talk about that point.
Well, of course. And it's remarkable that they are potentially that close, right? At least in the eyes of your league's contact, your league source. But I'm sure, you know, if there's one person out there who evaluates them that way, there's others as well. And I think that highlights the stakes of this summer, but really the next, you know, 72, 96 hours here is, can they find that piece that puts them into that legitimate conversation? And you know, the one piece is the most important thing, but then what can you do around that, right? Because it's not like, you know, you go sign Jake Gensel and all of a sudden you have a perfect roster. There's still ways you can upgrade around that, and, you know, how uncomfortable do you have to get with whatever the number is for Gensel. But I think that's a great way of framing it, right? Like, can you, there's ways to have a really good summer that don't involve landing that player. But if you do land that player, you've got a legitimate chance to be in that tier of team. And that's a really incredible opportunity if it doesn't come around all the time. That hasn't come around for a long time for this franchise specifically. I think that's I think that's a good way of framing like why people are so laser focused on it, because that's a huge, huge deal if you can accomplish that type of summer. Okay, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I know you and Dollywell had a good piece up at The Athletic last night about what you're hearing going into the draft and free agency from the Canucks. There's the goalie situation, there's targets, there's so much to get into, and we'll do that on the other side. Dimitri will join us at 1 o'clock, so stay tuned for that, of course, as well. By the way, NHL draft coverage here on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by Oxygen Yoga and Fitness, not your typical yoga studio. We're just about 3 hours from round one of the NHL draft getting going, but before that, more Canucks talk up next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Your text always welcome. And, of course, lots of interest at this time of year in what's going to happen next for the Canucks. As I mentioned, Dmitry Filipovich will join us in the final segment to wrap up the week. But before we get to that, you know, I mentioned just before we went to break, you and Rick Dollywell had the big piece up at The Athletic last night, Drancer, what the two of you are hearing about the Canucks' plans for this weekend, their potential UFA targets, and we can get into a lot of that, but I do think one thing that's cropped up over the last couple of days here is a potential change of plans, or at least maybe a reconsideration for what the Canucks are going to do in the crease next year. And just to set it up, I mean, I think after what Artur Shelov showed in the playoffs, and of course with Casey DeSmith as an unrestricted free agent, I think there was a pretty solid assumption from a lot of us that it was going to be Demko and Shelov's as the 1-2 for the Vancouver Canucks next year. It sounds like maybe there's at least a little bit of an uncertainty on that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, from what we're hearing, the Canucks, you know, really it was widely assumed, and we even reported it, that Casey DeSmith was going to hit the open market. Mm-hmm. And that's still very much a possibility, especially because, you know, I think there was some frustration with the way he lost the net when his only playoff start was maybe the best game of his career, right? But the side sort of re-engaged this week at the same time that the Canucks also disengaged in contract talks with Calder Cup playoff hero Zach Sochenko. So that combination is interesting, because if you're not extending Sochenko anymore, then that opens up a spot in the AHL. And if you're interested in a veteran backup, that would appear to close a spot that we all assumed was Artur Shelov's at the NHL level. Now, as I've mentioned repeatedly, right, like this is almost this movement from an analyst standpoint, right? This movement is like music to my ears. This has been a hobby horse. Yes. How many segments have I hijacked with this over the past 2 months, Jamie?
A lot.
Right?
You've been all over this for sure.
Like 10. But the club, you know, until this point, like I'd almost sort of given it up as not something worth continuing to bang my fist on the table about because the club didn't seem to have interest in it. She loves his waiver exempt, right? And not just from a, like, when you just think about Canucks goaltending, right? When you think about the fact that, you know, to this point in his career, right, Thatcher Demko has been hurt at the end of every season that he's been a workhorse starter, right? And that's, you know, unfortunate. Like, I think there's a lot of bad luck there. I don't know that that's, you know, something that will always happen. And I absolutely hate when players are tagged with an injury prone label. Like, I try to avoid doing it as much as possible, but it's something you have to weigh, especially because one thing about Demko that we know for sure is there are 7 to 10 week stretches, like every 12 month period, where he is not just the best goaltender in the world, but the best goaltender in the world by some margin, where like every game the Canucks play, it feels like it's hard for them to lose. And, you know, it's one thing to do that in like October, November, when this team was actually pretty decent, right? It's another thing, like he did it in March of 2021 when this team was brutal. Like he did it in January and February, you know, with the Bruce There It Is Canucks, right? I mean, every season he's played, he's put together these 10-week stretches where he is just completely unstoppable. And if you could ever get that performance, if you could ever engineer that 10 weeks to occur in May and June, like, oh boy, that would, there'd be a lot of long suffering Canucks fans who'd have a real shot at having, you know, getting to attend a parade and doing all the good things that come with actually winning a Stanley Cup. And so, you know, I do think at least it makes sense short term for this team to consider something relatively extreme, which is how do we get Demko to that point at the end of the year? And do we consider, you know, severely limiting how often he plays in order to best create those circumstances? At bringing in a veteran backup and building out, you know, sort of a platoon where it's like Demko 45 games. I know that seems low for a starter, but 45 games, you know, a backup goaltender 35 games, and a third goaltender who's waiver exempt the way she loves is to play 12, you know, but also start 40 or 50 in the AHL so that he gets 60 games. I feel like it answers Vancouver's goaltending issues like across the board best. It's like, you know, what are your priorities? Make sure that Demko is A++ form in the playoffs. Do everything you can to try and get, put him in a position to get that level of performance from him in May and June. Two, don't give up on the fact that Artur Shelovs probably did show us that he might have starter upside.
Yep.
And I don't think you want a guy with starter upside to play 25 games. Like, I don't want him spending his age 22, 23 season or whatever it is, playing 25 games and wearing a ball cap for all the others. Even though backup goaltender is a more demanding position than that, and there's real value in just being like the guy who NHL players shoot on in practice and on, I still want him getting more game reps than that. And not because I don't think he's ready to play NHL hockey, but because I think he might be talented enough to play a lot of NHL hockey down the line. All of this is only possible in my mind if you go out and get like $1.5 million, $2 million backup goaltender. That's complicated with Vancouver's sort of cap situation, but given the possible strength of this team's goaltending, I mean, I think it's worth aspiring to do if you can figure it out. And yet the fact that the club has sort of appeared to change directions on this score, you know, kind of at the 11th hour before the market opens, I do think begs some interesting questions.
Sorry, somebody just texted in and I was doing the math. What? Sorry?
I got to do the rant again.
Yeah, you did. I was doing the math along with you and I thought it checked out, but you did get up to 92 games in the regular season. 45-35.
45-35.
Right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
So 45, in the moment, I was like, yeah, that checks 12. Out. And I was like, wait a second. No, it doesn't. So it'd be like 45-25-12. Right.
Yeah,
which I think makes a lot of sense. Now, no. Somebody just texted it. I was like, hey, wait a second. I can't let that slide. Now more people are texting in about it. But my question is, okay, so is it a philosoph? Is it purely a philosoph? And I'm not saying you know the answer to this, but just like hearing the the change in thinking? Is it purely like a philosophical, hey, wait a second, maybe this is what we want to do? Or was there, I don't want to wildly speculate about like setbacks or anything like that, but was there something concrete, tangible that made them reassess? Or is it simply the case of, hey, they've been in rooms together talking about strategy and just going over all these scenarios and one kind of gained more credence within the organization over the course of a few weeks?
I'm going to be careful to not get over my skis here. I don't specifically know. I have some suspicions, but I want to be careful about speculating when it comes to this matter until I really have it locked down, which, you know, I was hoping to get locked down before we ran, but that's not how this job works sometimes. Sometimes you just have to present your questions without necessarily having the answers.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think it's important not to make unfounded speculation here, right? It just is such an interesting late in the game change into what we are hearing they were thinking, that it kind of does inevitably spur further questioning. I think the other part of it is, okay, they've re-engaged with Casey DeSmith. Is DeSmith 100% that guy you want as the veteran backup potentially to Thatcher Demko, or are there other options that you're willing to explore as well? Because, you know, it's one thing to re-engage with Casey DeSmith, but now all of a sudden he's only a few days away from being an unrestricted free agent as well. So that's going to be one to watch going into Monday, what the Canucks do in the crease here. Especially with the latest update from Drantz and Dhaliwal that they are more open now to that veteran backup goalie. Okay, the other, I would say one of the other most notable parts of your piece with Rick Dhaliwal, of course, re-emphasizing the interest in Jake Guentzel. You mentioned Tyler Toffoli and Chandler Stephenson as well. I'm not sure we've really heard a direct link to the Canucks and Chandler Stephenson before, so kudos to you guys for that one. But also really establishing the interest in Chris Tanev, of course, former Canuck, most recently of the Dallas Stars. We all know the story, and it's easy to understand why they would be so interested in Chris Tanev. I guess my question is Tanev, assuming he makes it to July 1st, which is the caveat with a lot of these players, assuming he makes it to July 1st, is that a, okay, if we don't get Jake Guentzel, then we pivot to Chris Tanev? Like, where does he kind of fit in the list of priorities for the Canucks?
Yeah, I think it's more if there's a unique opportunity to bring a person, competitor, warrior of that caliber in, I think they'd chase it. Mm. And, you know, they chased it at the deadline last year pretty hard. You know, I think they felt like they made a stronger offer than the one that Calgary preferred. But that's how it works sometimes when prospects are involved, right? You might have a different opinion of the prospect that Calgary loves and on and on. So they chased that player pretty hard, much like they chased Guentzel. Look, everyone in the organization just loves the guy. Players love the guy. Coaching staff, huge amount of respect for the player. Management, you know, we know from their past actions, are over the moon about what he could potentially bring in terms of playing lockdown defense. I mean, you know, being able to throw a Susi Tanev shutdown pair out, that sounds like a nightmare for teams to play against in zone, especially. So, I mean, I think Tanev's right there. You know, they need a scoring forward. There's no question about it. That's like the number one generic target. But I think in terms of like personalized targets, I think Tanev's as an individual, one of their top ones. And so, you know, I think it's one of those things where maybe you bring it in because you make the offer because you believe so strongly in the player in person, and kind of figure out some fit stuff later on. I think he's that type of player, that type of option from a Canucks perspective. But look, you look at their back end, and really we're talking about Meyer Soucy, Hughes Hronek. Draw it up on the whiteboard. I think you feel pretty good about having two pairs done. That doesn't mean you can just fill out your third pair with like two $1 million guys necessarily. I mean,
nope.
We've seen Canucks teams try that in the past. It was tough. We saw what happened when this team lost Soucy last season. And like, how long did they wait? 10 days before they swung a pretty major deal for Zadorov. And it was actually a multi-trade sequence to set it up. Like, they weren't even willing to go, you know, 2 weeks with like a third pair guy playing top pair minutes, right? No chance. They had no appetite. And so we know that they value depth. And I think that's sort of box that a player like Tanev, much like a player like Marino, would fit. I'd expect this team to sign two defensemen. Like, I think they're going to sign two defensemen, maybe not this weekend, but certainly, you know, before the season starts, and probably this weekend. Like, I think defenders are going to be on their list, a variety of them, and Tanev's just the name that I think they'd, you know, maybe get a little bit uncomfortable to bid on. You know, a lot of this is consistent with stuff I've been saying for a while, Jamie. Like, I thought Dallas would make the pitch. I think Toronto's going to come hard.
Yep.
And that's always been, that's been the shape of this since the deadline, right? And I never really thought Dallas would push this hard or have this good a shot at retaining him by this point. Like, I always thought he'd hit the market and it would be down to the hometown team or his former team. That was always my sense of this, the shape of this. That looks like that's coming to pass, but, you know, things change so fast. And even Dallas being this significantly still in the mix at this point is like something of a surprise relative to how I thought this would play out back when they acquired him. I thought that was a pretty pure rental piece from a Dallas Stars perspective. And yet it does look like they're pushing hard. So, or certainly sounds like it based on, you know, Friedman and Saravalli's reporting and across the board. So we'll see how this one plays out here. I'm fascinated to watch it.
Yeah, and whether it's Marino, whether it's Tanev, it does feel like another more than a hope bet right shot defenseman, right? Like more than a, hey, we got him for $1 million and we'll see what he can do. But a real credible right shot defenseman option is, again, after that high level scoring winger, that's probably the second highest priority for the team. Or at least
I'd expect two.
Sure, but
I'd expect two.
Am I on? Yeah. Okay. We're back here. We're back. That was weird. I think my mic cut out there for a second. We'll try to get Drance. Can you hear me?
You got me?
Yeah, we got you now. Did you lose me? Did I stop talking there for a second? That was wild.
No, I couldn't you. So I was like trying to indicate to you to keep talking.
Well, pure chaos here. Anyways, what I was saying was, one of them has to be at least of a tier where it's not like purely theoretical, but they're a top four guy. You know what I mean? And then you can do the, you know, $1 million or two or like $1.5 million. And he's probably just a third pairing guy, but maybe there's a little bit more there. But I think you need to go for at least one where there's more, where you're not hoping as much. Right. And I think that, again, I don't know how the club sees it, but to me, that would be second priority after a high profile scoring winger.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I think you need two.
Yeah.
Like I think you want, you know, ideally you want two guys and maybe even a third that's not a hope bet here. A third that's like more of an upside $1 million bet. Or you want one and you want two guys that are sort of fit that description. I mean, I do think you need a fair number of bodies on the back end, just based on the history of this market, how many injuries this team traditionally sustains on the back end, and, you know, how important playing lockdown defense is for this team. You know, this team was able to get by with Noah Juulsen stepping up and proving himself as an everyday caliber NHL defender, and he appeared in 55 plus games, and that's great. But it's not so much about upgrading from what you got out of Juulsen in those 55 games. It's that if you're in a spot where you're needing a player like Juulsen to really perform and show you something, perform at a level that he's not previously hit. And I buy that he can sustain it this season, by the way. I'm actually a big fan of his penalty killing and the physical game, even if, you know, I'd be a little concerned about what it looks like if the club used him in higher leverage, like against higher competition, you know, some of the ways we saw in the playoffs. But when you're in that spot already with, you know, a defensive group that was pretty deep and that the club supplemented in season, does mean that you're one bounce away, right? Like one shot that hits a guy in the wrong place from having another guy come in. You know what I mean? From having Ed Friedman, who plays 50 games, maybe on the left side with Noah Juulsen on a third pair. And maybe if you're not comfortable with that, then you have to spread out your defense minutes. And maybe you end up playing Myers 22, 23 minutes for a 3 week stretch. And, you know, I mean, our audience will remember early in the season when Myers was really struggling. Like I like Myers's game overall. I think he can contribute really well in stable environments, but I think the, you know, one way for that to be challenging is if you overexert him, right? If you need him more than you want. And that's sort of where having enough depth comes into play. Canucks have $15.5 million here, right? Like, I do think, look, are you willing to cut some corners on the back end if you're landing a Gensel type? For sure. But if you're landing a secondary type target, you know, another value forward or what have you, then, you know, I think making sure you don't have, you know, hope bets at all, 1 through 6 as you draw it on the whiteboard in the summer, makes a fair bit of sense for how this team should go about building their back end.
Yeah, I just don't think there's room. There's definitely not room for Gensel and then 2 sure thing defensemen, right? But to your point, is there room for Toffoli and 2 relatively sure thing defensemen? Yes, probably. And if you do miss out on Gensel, then that probably is the route that makes the most sense to go. Just by the way, since we mentioned the goalie thing, Rick Dhaliwal tweeting, not much happening on the Casey DeSmith front on a possible return to Vancouver. The Canucks are in the market for a goalie. So re-emphasizing that they are still looking for that veteran backup, but sounds like maybe not going to be Casey DeSmith, although, of course, nothing done until it's done. Just another, I don't want to say minor necessarily, but concerned with the minor league team, with the Abbotsford Canucks, some news and notes on a few Abbotsford players, including Aiden McDonough, who doesn't sound like he's going to be qualified by the team. He'll become an unrestricted free agent. On the other hand, Jet Wu, you're reporting that they want to get a deal done with him. They will qualify him, but there's also a chance they'll get a deal done even before that. And I don't want maybe a little bit of positivity or hope going forward for Danil Klimovich as well.
Yeah. Well, look, it was a miserable campaign for Danil Klimovich. And I think there certainly were discussions about whether or not a fresh start would be best for all sides. And ultimately it seems that both sides have decided instead to recommit and see how it works with a new head coach, a new coaching staff down in Abbotsford. So I'm expecting Danil Klimovich to be given an opportunity to bounce back. You know, he only had 4 points in 24 games last season, dealt with injury, but also was a healthy scratch down the stretch. This is a guy with every tool in the world, but his development has significantly plateaued. And, you know, I mean, he was selected ahead of Atu Ratu and Logan Stankoven, right? I mean, this is a piece where if the Canucks had a player here, it would be a huge deal in terms of, you know, we're talking about how desperately they need help on the wings, right? And it's like, anyway, Klimovich will be given another shot to bounce back and build a relationship with Manny Malhotra. And that opportunity was a big selling point, avoiding, you know, sort of any drama down there. Not minor drama, given sort of his perch in the pecking order. But yeah, I mean, it's time for Klimovich to stop being the 2 years away from being 2 years away guy and begin to, you know, be a consistent producer in Abbotsford if he's going to have a shot at, you know, making a meaningful impact at the NHL level. He's certainly got the skills and the size and the skating ability to do it.
The Bruno Caboclo draft 10 years ago this year, by the way, which means he's been a great player for 6 years, right? The math checks out. In the year
well
six,
no because he's 2 years away
player.
From being 2 years away,
right? Well, no, that was when he was
that's
drafted.
Not just 4 years.
Yes, it is. Oh, I see. Yeah, I see. No,
I think the implication is that he's still going to be 2 years away in 4 years.
No, he's in 2 years, he'll be 2 years away, so after those 4 years he'll be here. That's it.
I always thought that it was more like a
like he was perpetually
like
2 years
tail thing.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, and hey, that certainly turned out to be the case with Bruno Caboclo. Hopefully not with Danil Klimovich, as you say. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And one other note. Now, we talked about him a little bit yesterday, but Steven Stamkos' agent saying that he will hit the market on July 1st. So again, we've seen this before with Tampa. Just because a player goes to unrestricted free agency, it doesn't necessarily mean they will sign with another team. I'm sure Tampa is still going to try to find a way to do something. Although I did think it was fascinating that Elliot Friedman mentioned he'd heard Tampa in on Jake Gensel as well, because you just look at their salary cap sheet and it's so hard to figure how they would be able to do that. But it's Tampa, you know, sometimes they find a way. But Steven Stamkos could be another name out there for teams looking for that high-profile scoring winger like the Canucks. I mean, the other thing is, even if he's not a fit for the Canucks or a target for the Canucks, is he a target for a team that would also be in on Jake Gensel or Tyler Toffoli, right? Like, I think just having extra names out there is useful. Even if you're not interested in that name specifically, it makes things slightly easier for a team like the Canucks.
I like your Tampa finds a way, very like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. Tampa finds a way.
Yeah.
Jeannot and what's the ex-Penguin, Sheary?
Mm-hmm.
That's 4.6 right there, baby. That should do it. That gets them up to 7.5-8 million, maybe. Use that Florida tax rate.
Sure.
yeah, no, I don't understand it. Stamkos, man. I mean, I think he'll have a pretty robust market because
I would think
he's
so
well respected.
Yep.
Still had 80 points this year.
40 goals.
Not really a play driver 5-on-5 anymore. But still one of the best snipers in the history of the game, and you throw him out the F flank and Pettersson at the right flank or JT Miller at the right flank, I think you're probably cooking. Like, I think that sounds pretty fun on the power play. Obviously, a pretty close relationship with Rick Tocchet, dating back to Tocchet coaching him during his rookie season. So certainly an interesting one to look for. But man, there's going to be a ton of interest there. And I think if you're hoping on something like, hey, maybe you can do it for short term, it's like, Stamkos is going to have options, as he should.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Hall of Fame bound player, a noted, excellent teammate, a champion, and of course, literally the best one-shot goal scorer of the last 20 years.
Okay, Dmitry Filipovich joins us on the other side to wrap up the week here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz here live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. And just to get you caught up on all the programming upcoming here for us on this show and just for the station in general, of course, the NHL draft is this afternoon at 4 o'clock. It gets going. Canucks without a first round pick, but still another Vancouver product. Macklin Celebrini expected to go first overall. So lots of excitement there. And we'll have us, Kipper and Bourne up next. And then the People Show with Bick at 3, Draft Central edition of Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah on the air at 4. Dan, Sat, and Bick will be hosting an NHL draft show tomorrow starting at 8:30 for rounds 2 through 7. And then, of course, on Monday, wall-to-wall coverage of unrestricted free agency on Canada Day, starting with Halford and Brough from 6 to 9. Myself and Drancer are on from 9 till noon. Bick and Randeep Janda from 12 to 3. And then Canucks Central wrapping things up from 3 to 6. So, again, we are on the air from 9 until noon on July 1st to get you covered on everything the Canucks do in free agency. We're trying to connect with Dmitry Filipovich here on the phone line, so hopefully Dim can join us momentarily here. But lots else happening around the league, lots else happening with the Vancouver Canucks right now as we go into draft day and go into the start of unrestricted free agency on the weekend. Okay, let's get into some of the text message inbox here. Joe and Smithers texts in, a goalie we need Zadorov. If we don't sign him, we will take three steps back going into the playoffs. We are going to get pushed around and abused like we always have. Edmonton and Nashville didn't have an answer for him. That's from Joe in Smithers. We can get more into the inbox, but right now we are very pleased to be joined on the line by our guy from the Hockey PDOcast. He is Dmitry Filipovich. Dmitry, what's going on, man? How are you?
Fellas, sorry for the delay. I'm out here in the islands. The Wi-Fi and the connection's a bit spotty.
It's all good.
Classic, pick the family trip on the busiest weekend of the NHL's calendar. So apologies for that, but hopefully we'll make it work today.
No worries whatsoever here, Dim. We're just happy to have you on the show. Lots going on right now, of course, around the league. This is our first chance to talk to you. I mean, I know it's all the way back at the beginning of the week, so it feels a bit like old news, but our first chance to talk with you since the Stanley Cup was awarded. What was your big takeaway from the Florida Panthers, you know, avoiding the epic collapse and getting the job done in Game 7?
Yeah, it was an impressive bounce back from them, right? Especially after losing those three games in a row, that game six in particular, they look kind of defeated, demoralized, and it makes sense. Everything was going against them from a momentum perspective. So for them to get back home, score that early goal, really get back to playing the way they really had all season, was very impressive in my opinion and fully deserved. We saw that top defensive system on full display in that game. They really made it difficult for Edmonton, shut them down. And so I thought it was a great encapsulation of why they were so good this season, why they were a deserving champion. And so in that sense, it was really satisfying to watch.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's a good way of pointing it, right? They were just such an impressive team. They were built in such an impressive way as well. And, you know, I'm seeing tweets out there. Sam Reinhart is going to, not unexpected, sign a deal to stay in Florida. Maybe will be announced soon. Are they poised to just keep being? Look, it's really hard to repeat. We all know that. But are they poised to just keep being one of the top teams in the league for the foreseeable future here?
Yeah, I think they're pretty well set up. Obviously, they're going to have some tough business decisions ahead. It seems like they've already made Aaron Ekblad available. He has 1 year left on his deal at, I believe, 7.5 per. And so they're going to see if they can trade him now while he still has value before his contract expires next summer. They're going to probably walk away from Brendan Montour here now, and it makes sense. He's a 30-year-old defenseman. You don't want to pay him long-term. And so, yeah, assuming they retain Reinhart, I think it sounds like they're also going to extend Carter Verhaeghe ahead of his free agency as well. And so they're set up here with the system, with the star players they have, particularly up front, to keep playing this just devastating style of pressure defensive hockey. And so we saw it with Vegas a bit last year, and I know they kind of struggled this season, but they're set up pretty well here to go on a bit of a run. It's really difficult to stay atop the mountain in the NHL, and I'm sure they're going to face adversity next year. But in terms of kind of champions coming out of their championship season, it feels like they're as well set up as any recent champion to go on a bit of a run here.
Dim, lots of reports about momentum between Gensel and Carolina. You know, from your perspective, you watch the whole league closely. Is Gensel, in your view, the type of guy, the type of player, the caliber of winger that is worth just completely opening the vault for?
Well, it seems like the Carolina deal that Elliot Friedman has reported, it seems like it's going to be an 8x8, right? So I think Carolina has the unique distinction of being able to give him that 8 year. So I think from him, that's like a big selling point. The $8 million AAV is incredibly reasonable for a player of his caliber, especially with the cap going up. And yeah, it's always risky with these UFAs, especially once you start kind of approaching your 30s in terms of how that player is going to age, how their scoring efficiency is going to progress as they get into their 30s. But he's such an efficient player already. He kind of came into the league a bit later. I don't think he has nearly as many miles on him as typical 30-year-old UFAs do. And so I think he's going to age pretty well. I think he's going to be worth every single penny of that $8 million AAV. And so I think that's a big coup for Carolina to be able to retain him.
With if Carolina, like, you know, things change hour by hour at this time of year.
Of course.
Let's accelerate the number to, like, let's say 10. Is that still like 10 times 7? Is that still a number that teams should be excited about for a player like Gensel?
Yeah, I think my excitement might become a bit more moderated at that point. I think 10 is certainly getting on the rich side of things. But listen, like, you look at this class in particular, there's a lot of teams who are looking to make a splash, who are looking to add a legitimate top flight scorer like him. There's very few guys available. The cap's going up. Teams have space to play with. And so from his perspective, it's a great time to be a UFA because it feels like there's a bunch of teams that are in on the bidding on him. And so I'm kind of curious that it hasn't risen even more than it has. So yeah, it's always risky once you start getting into that $10 million range. But for me, he's such a unique player in that regard, especially in relation to what else is available, that really kind of sets him apart from everyone else. And if you're looking for a scoring infusion, like, he's the guy. So I think in that case, it's money well spent, and it makes sense that Carolina would be as intrigued as keeping him as they are.
Yeah, it's a good point, right? Like, he is such a high caliber player. There's only really one of them who's going to be on the market, and there's a lot of teams that are in the market for that type of player. So if you were one of those teams, like the Canucks, and you miss out on Jake Guentzel, and, you know, it doesn't look like Sam Reinhart's going to be there, who would be your next target, right? Okay, we need a scoring punch in the top six. We need to address that. We can't do Guentzel. Who would you be most interested in going after in terms of unrestricted free agents?
Yeah, it feels like Toffoli's been kind of the name that's floated out the most, right? And obviously the connection with him and his time in Vancouver makes a lot of sense. He'd be at the top of the list. I think Jonathan Marchessault, certainly he'll be a bit pricier. And I'm not sure, like, the reporting on him has been very limited in terms of where he's at with Vegas, what the market for him is like. He's a bona fide scorer. I thought this year he was especially impressive in terms of what he did for Vegas while they were banged up. So I'd be highly intrigued by him. Otherwise, you might honestly be restricted to going the trade route and trying to acquire either a reclamation project or someone that you can kind of buy low on and ramp them up playing with Pettersson that way, as opposed to, you know, getting a certified bona fide guy who's already there, because there's just so few of those guys available right now.
One name I wanted to throw to you is Victor Arvidsson, right? Who only played 18 games last year, but does have a track record of being a pretty, pretty accomplished goal scorer in his career. Now, it's the kind of thing where you think, like, oh, injury concerns, maybe won't be that much of a market for him. Although it sounds like that's not going to be the case, but just kind of hypothetically, how much would a Victor Arvidsson interest you for the Canucks?
Yeah, I love the player. I mean, listen, he can play with pace. He's a great creator off the rush in particular, which would be very appealing for Vancouver, considering how much they lacked that last season of the team. So he would be an immediate fit and an immediate upgrade. I think the market on him is going to be a bit limited because he's struggled with these sort of recurring back issues and has really been unable to stay in the lineup full time the past couple of seasons. So maybe there is a good buy low opportunity there. I've really seen him only linked to Edmonton at this point, which is interesting. I've seen the sort of connection between them bringing him in and playing him with Dreisaitl and Holloway on that sort of second scoring line and how he'd fit there. And I love that for them as well. So, yeah, I hadn't really thought about him from a Canucks perspective, but he would check a lot of the boxes that I think they're looking for right now.
Just diagnose for us. Canucks have about $15.5 million in space, Dim, with, you know, four skaters and a backup goaltender among their needs. Can I get you to list like three top priorities for the Canucks? What would you like to see them accomplish over the course of this long weekend if you're going to go into next week talking about, you know, how they've improved themselves to the point of being, a credible contender?
Yeah, I think there's two above all else, right? One is a legitimate scorer that they can play with Pettersson and really give him a running bait to succeed with heading into next season. And then the other is just a legitimate puck mover on the blue line, someone who can either carry their own pair so that you have something beyond Hughes and Hronek, or can potentially work in some sort of a complementary role and give you a legitimate second pair. And so that's where I guess we kind of transition here a little bit, not to take over your guys' show, but all the John Marino smoke, right? And how it's come out that with New Jersey being really linked to Brett Pesce in the free agent market, they're looking to trade him now. Nashville's been rumored. Vancouver's been rumored. So I think a player like that would make a lot of sense from his puck moving perspective. He'd be a great second pair option for them. So yeah, I think those two above all else really stand out. And then everything else is kind of, you know, luxury items and stuff that would be nice, but ultimately isn't a necessity for me, at least at this point of the offseason.
And with regards to, like, what about a player like a Chandler Stephenson? Are you among those people who buy that Chandler Stephenson could do more than he did in Vegas, or do you see him as sort of a winger and a complimentary piece who's kind of benefited from playing with Stone and company?
Yeah, I hate to say this because I've really appreciated his game over the past couple of years, but I would be completely out of the Chandler Stephenson business, especially with whatever he's going to command on the market, just considering how few center options are available. He's a player whose game is so oriented around just pure speed, and we already saw that kind of regress or show signs of decline last year. He was just carrying the puck significantly less. He was way less efficient in terms of exits and entries, and so those things are red flags for me. And then listen, like, he played full time and had most of his success playing with Mark Stone, who was very uniquely suited to doing all the stuff Stevenson needs to succeed. He'd win pucks, he'd win battles along the boards, and then just essentially immediately transition it to him in the middle of the ice. And Stevenson would be basically be able to have a runway to just skate as freely as he could. So I'm not sure the Canucks would be able to replicate that because there's just so few Mark Stones out there with those, with that unique skill set. And so given the age, given the signs of decline we've already seen, I think that's a bad bet, especially considering what I think he's going to get, which is a long-term deal in the sort of $5+ million range.
You mentioned John Marino there, and you know, you read my mind, Dmitry. You're so locked in. We have such good chemistry when you come on the show.
We really
do. You knew exactly where we were going with this, but obviously a name top of mind for Canucks fans with some of the reporting out there. You mentioned you think he'd be an interesting fit. Just, you know, for our listeners who haven't had a chance to watch him play a ton out there in New Jersey, just give us kind of scouting report breakdown on what John Marino brings at this point.
Yeah, he was obviously phenomenal 2 years ago for New Jersey when they took that big leap as an organization and made the playoffs. This past year, he struggled a little bit. I think a lot of it seems to be he was just done in by a really low on-ice save percentage. The goalies behind him weren't playing really well. It feels like everything kind of caved in New Jersey. And so he was partly responsible for that, certainly. And I'm not trying to absolve him of any blame, but I think he's not the player he showed last year. I think he's much more the player he was 2 years ago. And that's a guy who can play reliable minutes, can move the puck really efficiently, defends the rush really well, sometimes struggles kind of around his own net and sort of boxing out and doing some of that heavier lifting stuff. But certainly a player in today's game, like, that skill set is very valuable and would differentiate him from a lot of the options that Canucks already have, especially beyond the top pair. And so you put him on this team, and I think it really opens the door for you to do some cool stuff with the blue line beyond the top pair. And that's why I really like him for them.
Yeah, and I mean, I think certainly the cap hit, like 4.4 for three more years for a 27-year-old. I mean, that's a based on some of the deals I think we're going to see on July 1st, that's a pretty enticing number if you're able to do that for John Marino. I did want to ask you also, speaking about the Canucks blue line, we saw Quinn Hughes take home the Norris last night, ultimately not that close over second place Roman Josi, and not a big surprise, right? We all watched what Quinn Hughes did. The goal scoring jumped up. The team got so much better. Drancer was saying earlier in the show he thinks that, you know, right now it's still Cale Makar you give as the number one defenseman in the league, but Quinn Hughes has a real chance to challenge him for that spot over the next year or two. Do you see it the same way with Quinn Hughes?
I do, yeah. I think there's certain things physically that Cale Makar can do just because of his size and skating ability, of course, that sort of sets him apart from everyone else, just because I feel like regardless of the situation, the team, anywhere you put him, he's just going to be able to do things physically that very few other defenders can, including Quinn Hughes. But what we saw from Hughes last year in terms of how much the offensive system revolved around him, what he did going back to retrieve pucks, evade forecheckers, and get out of the zone, you put it all together, and then the added improvement with his shot and his offensive zone work, it was a total package. It was a remarkable season. He was the clear best defenseman I watched all year, so very deserving of the accolades that he got, and I'm really excited to see more. Like, we're going to see now that they brought Hronek back, we're going to see them keep building on that chemistry, and hopefully as a team around him gets better and more solidified with more talent, he'll be able to spread his wings even more and do more cool stuff offensively. So yeah, I could honestly talk about Quinn Hughes and all the cool stuff he was doing this past year all day. I know we're limited here on time, but I just think the world of him as a player.
Drance is disconnected, Dim. This is like the fourth time it's happened today. I'm just staring.
Have you guys spoken about Drance's really fun article that he did with Daryl Belfry on Hughes that he finally got to put out? Because I thought that thing was a remarkable read for really Canucks fans, but I think anyone who appreciates
it. Wow, what a plug for Drancer. We haven't really talked about it we touched on it a little bit, just kind of the focus from Quinn Hughes, but not necessarily the Belfry side of it. I know you've had the chance to interview him. I think on a number of occasions, am I right, on the PDO cast this year?
Yeah, he was a weekly staple for me this year. And in particular, I think kind of halfway through the year, we got to do a full episode on just Quinn Hughes alone. So if you didn't listen to that on the Sportsnet Radio Network, sorry to do another plug here, but certainly go out of your way to find that on the PDO cast feed. It was a really fun one. Kind of, you know, got to dive into the intricacies of Quinn's game, but also some of the developments he made this year in working with Belfry last offseason. And so, yeah, it was a kind of cool peek behind the curtain in terms of all the heavy lifting that he did behind the scenes and in the off season to accomplish what he did this year. And I think Drance also did a great job of highlighting some of that stuff in written form.
Okay, boys, to close this interview, now that I'm back,
yes,
I want to play a game. So let's pretend that we have a drop ready in which it's like the Jigsaw quote from Saw, because Jigsaw is a bit part figure on our show where he's like, want to play a game? Yeah, you guys want to play a game, and this is going to be the game. I'm going to pick some free agents, okay? And I'm going to tell you their next team odds as per Vegas.
Okay.
And I want you guys each to pick a long shot for where that player lands. Okay?
So pick a long shot from the odds you give us.
Correct.
Okay.
And we can discuss it a little bit too. Dim, you in?
I'm in. Let's go.
All right. So I'm going to start with Jake DeBrusk. DeBrusk is actually plus 150 to return to Boston.
Okay.
Plus 350 for Edmonton, 450 for the Toronto Maple Leafs, 900 for Detroit, 1,000 for Seattle, 1,200 for the Montreal Canadiens, and 1,500 for the New Jersey Devils. You can also bet the field at plus 310.
Oh, wow. Can I go first?
Yeah, go.
I'll take the field. I think I've seen some reporting that he's been linked to the Calgary Flames. I was surprised that you didn't include them on their list there, that Edmonton was ahead of them, in fact, as a favorite. It's a bit of a strange fit because they've been selling a lot, right? They just got rid of Mangiapane. Kadri seems available. But I don't think they necessarily want to tear everything down. I think they're very interested in a guy like DeBrusk, who sort of allows them to straddle the line between rebuilding and retooling, or whatever you want to describe it as. So I like the field there, and in particular, Calgary, which is a team you didn't list amongst the favorites.
I'm going to take Detroit just because DeBrusk seems to perfectly fit the mold of like good but not truly needle moving free agents that Steve Yzerman apparently loves to target over the last couple of seasons. Like, he could easily be Detroit's answer this year to Andrew Kopp, to JT Compher. They have the cap space. It just seems like, oh yeah, they're gonna pay an eye popping number to DeBrusk on July 1st. So I'll take the Red Wings.
All right, we should have spent more time on this segment. I'm just gonna do two really quickly. Here's an interesting one though.
We got like three or four minutes here.
Okay. The favorite to land Jake Guentzel is, drumroll please,
Carolina.
The field.
plus
125. Yeah. Plus 125, the field, the favorite to be Jake Guentzel's next team. Carolina Hurricanes plus 150. Canucks plus 310. Chicago Blackhawks plus 1,000. The LA Kings plus 2,000. The Vegas Golden Knights plus 2,500, New York Rangers also plus 2,500, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, his former team, plus 3,000.
So the favorite is none of those teams.
Yes. So who else could
it
be, right?
Wild.
There was a lot of smoke that Dallas was interested yesterday. I don't know how they would make that work money-wise.
Dallas, Tampa.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not taking I think it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say, what was LA? I like LA there.
LA is plus 2,000.
Yeah, in terms of longer shots, I'll take LA.
I really think Chicago makes a lot of sense for him because they can just give him an obscene amount of money, but it doesn't seem like it's headed that way. So I'll go with Carolina just because Elliot Friedman essentially reported that they're well down the path of that 8x8.
Yeah, I can't believe you can get the Carolina longer odds than the field right now with some of the reporting that's out there. And also that's a big drop off from the Canucks to the next tier of teams there as well.
Yep.
I'll be honest with you. Betting Carolina plus 150 and Vancouver plus 310. I mean, feels like free money. Like, you just bundle those together. I think you'll end up profitable. Nikita Zadorov. Okay. Plus 200. To go to the Toronto Maple Leafs, plus 300 to go to the New Jersey Devils, plus 450 to go to the Nashville Predators, plus 450 to go to the LA Kings, plus 600 to go to Philadelphia, Zadorov plus Torts, let's go, plus 700 to go to Montreal, plus 800, the field, which now includes Vancouver, who are off the board, and plus 1,000, the least likely place that Vegas thinks Zadorov will go in the entire world is Utah.
I love that. Give me the field there. because I know that Toronto makes sense, but I'm not that sold on it. And at that value, I like that price. I could see him go to a random team that just gives him a bunch of money. So
yes.
I'll go with the field on this one.
Yeah, I like the field there. I'm tempted to say Utah just because like they have zero defensemen signed. But I think just in general, like the Utah, Anaheim, San Jose, Chicago nexus of teams where it's like, we got so much money, we got to do something with it. That seems like a very interesting, all of those seem like interesting landing spots for Zadorov.
Do we got time for one more?
Sure.
Rush it in?
Quickly. Lightning round.
Tyler Toffoli. The favorite is the New York Rangers at plus 210. Then the Vancouver Canucks plus 300. The LA Kings 3.8 to 1. The field 7 to 1. The Bruins are also 7 to 1. And then these three teams have longer odds than the field. Winnipeg Jets 7.5 to 1. Seattle Kraken 8 to 1. And the Detroit Red Wings 9 to 1.
I like the Kings there.
Yeah.
Obviously has a connection with them. I think they're going to swing and miss on Gensel. They have to replace Arvidsson, so I like him as a plan B for them.
I'll take the Canucks. If Gensel goes to Carolina, it feels like Toffoli to Vancouver has a lot of momentum behind it. Grants, you got one?
Well, thanks for playing along.
All right.
What a host.
We'll wrap it up there. Dim, thank you as always. As a reminder, draft coverage here on Sportsnet 650 gets going at 4 and then all day tomorrow. And then Dranter and I are on the air at 9 a.m. on Monday, July 1st, to get you everything going on in free agency and with the Canucks. Looking forward to it. Have a great weekend. We're back on Monday right here on Sportsnet 650.